Our last case this morning is 2019-651 and 2019-654, the State of Ohio versus Alvin Dent Jr. and William Walker Jr. For the appellant, Ms. Bond. Oh, before we start, I should note that Justice French has recused from this matter, and sitting in her stead is Judge Jean Zamuda from the 6th District Court of Appeals. Welcome, Judge.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court and counsel Mr. Blake. Excuse me. Organized crime in Ohio exists when a criminal enterprise is fully operational and actively engaged in pursuing their illicit activity, as demonstrated by conducting two or more predicate offenses. In Ohio, there's simply no longevity requirement to establish either enterprise or a pattern. This doesn't have to occur over a span of a day, 2 days, 2 months, 2 years. As long as we show there's an existing enterprise and they're operational and they're fulfilling their purpose, that is sufficient for a RICO conviction in Ohio.
And this was a one-day activity, correct?
Correct.
Certain hours during the day.
We had 4 hours, and that comes from the surveillance video from inside the drug house.
So what do we use for the term, to satisfy the term pattern?
Okay, pattern, I think we can look to the HJ decision. I would submit that the 10th District looks to HJ, but they take it out of context. In HJ, they talk about a continuity requirement being open-ended, and the key there is whether or not there is a threat of continued activity. And we have that here. These people didn't close up shop. They didn't take their bulk quantity of dope out of the house. They kept their equipment in the house. They kept the packaging equipment in the house, the baggies, the microwave. Everything was left there. And I think under that construction, we have a pattern. And I think also HJ is instructional because it talks about continuity being satisfied when the predicates are a regular way of conducting the defendant's ongoing business.
But pattern requires events, not offenses. The prop that you've submitted in your initial statement references two or more offenses. That's not how a pattern is defined by the Ohio statute. It's events. And the issue, and I think the 10th District's decision framed everything that happened, everything you just discussed, is one event because it happened one day in the course of 4 hours. My question to you is, how do you differentiate, why are you exchanging offense versus event? Because the event is the issue, not offense.
I would say predicate offense. Predicates are what is defined under a pattern. The pattern is defined as two or more incidents of corrupt activity, and we're talking about predicate offenses here, that are related to the affairs of the same enterprise, that are not so isolated or not so closely related to each other in connection and time and place that they constitute a single event. The 10th District's analysis, by saying that these are remote offenses, they're bundling this entire package of criminal conduct, the package that occurred over 4 hours of time, and circumstantial evidence indicated this was ongoing activity. This was a fully operational drug house.
Was there any evidence submitted to the jury that suggested that these two individuals were part of that ongoing drug operation?
Absolutely, and circumstantially.
That's not what the brief says. The brief said all the evidence that was submitted was for this four-hour tape. So the two of them, whatever they did prior to that, that wasn't part of the record at trial. Is that accurate?
I would disagree with that. There is circumstantial evidence that they were all in on this drug house together. Mr. Walker specifically was seen, I believe it was 5 days before the search occurred. He is directly tied to this.
Seen what, though?
Seen entering the house. During the surveillance period on March 15th, the detective testified that he observed customers go up and knock on the door, either the front door or the back door. Mr. Walker doesn't knock. He walks right into this fully operational drug house.
But that's so neutral on its face.
I would simply disagree. I think the fact that
he's... what if you went to borrow money?
Well, we could speculate about the purpose of, that he's going in there for, but when we combine that with what we see on the tape, we see him counting large sums of money. That money is from the drug activity occurring inside this residence. We see 15 separate F5 sales of drugs inside this house. We have the bulk possession, almost 29 grams of cocaine in the house.
Counsel, I hear you. I want to go back to your definition, 29-23-31E, where it says, and are not so closely related to each other and connected in time and place that they constitute a single event. Okay, time and place. Now you got same place.
Same place.
Same time.
In the, within 4 hours.
Not the same time. Four hours.
Second is the difference.
I think that phrase in the definition gets at what this court talked about in Schlosser, the difference between a fully operational enterprise, a connection to a drug house, versus the individuals who go out on a street corner and sell, you know, multiple 5-ounce, 5-gram, you know, rocks of crack cocaine. It's not the series, but its relationship to the enterprise, and this court has discussed that in Beverly and Miranda. The connection between the pattern and the overarching enterprise, and we have that here. The fact that a house was used is significant to a finding that this was criminal activity and that there was a pattern. They picked a house in a residential neighborhood that was near their target market. They're not out in a field in some abandoned building cooking the dope. They're located near their target customers. The house is used to conceal the drug activity, to ensure that it could be ongoing. They can't do this in public because they'll get busted. They conceal that activity. They cook the cocaine, they manufacture it. The house represents a manufacturing center. Additionally, this was a sales facility. It was established on the day of the search, as observed by the detective in the days and weeks leading up to the search. And as the public complained about it, the public complained about drug activity, they complained about shots fired, they complained about general nuisance of all the people going in and out of the house at all hours of the day.
Did that pertain specifically, all those complaints, to Mr. Walker and Mr. Dent? Were they identified?
I apologize.
Were they identified at the time of being the those involved in those the subject of those complaints?
No, Your Honor, that's not in the record. It seems to be the house was the target of the complaints. The subsequent...
They own the house?
There is no ownership paperwork found relating to the house. And I would submit that criminals typically don't sign tenancy agreements or leaseholds or sublet agreements. There's usually no documentation when a criminal group go into a residence.
Was there any proof that they lived there?
There is no proof that they lived there. However, there are clothes, there were beds, there were futons and couches.
But there's no proof that they lived there.
Correct.
So you've got 25 videos that show 15 drug transactions, right?
Correct.
All taking place in a short amount of time in one day.
4 hours, that's correct.
And then the other testimony is that one of the gentlemen was observed walking straight into the house, not knocking, having easy access to the property.
Absolutely.
And that's it?
That is substantial evidence. The evidence on the video is compelling. These three defendants, Mr. Dent, Mr. Walker, Gross, and there was a fourth co-defendant who
pled. Well, compelling of what? I mean, it's compelling that illegal activity is taking place, without question, but compelling?
Of the RICO, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I would submit that is because these gentlemen, the ones who were indicted for the RICO, these are the gentlemen working with the dope, and those are the only gentlemen working with the bulk cocaine. They're the ones getting
on that day.
On that day, yes.
Okay.
Yes, this is a one-day RICO. There's nothing in the statute that prohibits a RICO offense from existing in a matter of hours.
And was there anything that, just based on the scope of the investigation, you had film or you had a camera inside, correct?
It was the defendant's own surveillance. They set up that surveillance to protect their product.
I understand that, but somehow you were able to access all that.
That was downloaded. They saved the video surveillance from the kitchen was saved on a hard drive, and that was what was downloaded for trial for the discs.
Okay, and did you know that that was available?
I don't believe they knew.
Did the investigating officers, whoever set up the surveillance?
No, they did not know that they were, that the defendants were surveilling their own dope operation.
And so on this hard drive you got, there was no other, showed no other days, no other activity, just captured those 4 hours.
That's correct.
If the two of them, or the four of them, had only met once on that particular day and did all the things that the video shows, do you still contend that you satisfy the pattern definition? If they've never met before, if they've never engaged in the manufacturing, the packaging, the selling of drugs, other than this day, okay? So it's a hypothetical.
Yes.
Do you believe that satisfies the pattern element as defined under the Ohio statute?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. And the reason is because the statute, 292332, prohibits anyone employed by, associated with any enterprise from participating in, directly or indirectly, the affairs of the enterprise. So if these gentlemen were there for a shift, that pattern is established during their shift.
Wouldn't you have to show their other shifts?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think the pattern is established by the comprehensive conduct that's captured on the video and the circumstantial evidence of the existence of the operation before and the threat of ongoing activity after.
Do you think the 10th District made a legal error, or do you think they made an evidentiary error in viewing the evidence too narrowly, not drawing other inferences from the evidence, or both?
Your Honor, I think this is a legal error, and in many ways this is akin to the Miranda decision, where you had a lower appellate court interpreting into the RICO statute a separate element. What the court's doing here is interpreting a longevity element into both pattern and enterprise to now satisfy the RICO offense.
It seems to me that, you know, you've got two kind of different arguments, right? You've got one argument that says if you just look at that day and nothing else, That's all you need, because there was a pattern on that day. There was an enterprise on that day. But aren't you also making an argument that says, even if you believe there's some other kind of longevity requirement, that's met in this case because there's evidence that the house was established, that people had been there before, that you could infer that these people were working there before. I mean, aren't you kind of making both those arguments? I'm having trouble just kind of separating the two.
I do think they got the facts wrong, but this was a sufficiency review, and it was whether or not there was an element of longevity met, and that's why the propositions of law are phrased the way they are. They could have broomed this under a manifest weight, but they didn't. They looked at it as purely legal sufficiency. By doing so, they've added a durational requirement to the statute. They've abandoned the sufficiency standard of review, which required looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution. And for those reasons, I think this court should reverse. I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Counsel.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. Opposing counsel, ladies and members of the judges of the Ohio Supreme Court, I'm Attorney Dustin Blake, and I represent Mr. Walker in this case. First, as a threshold matter, I think the court could consider dismissing as improvidentially granted. This is a decision from the 10th District Court of Appeals. It was very specific to the facts of this case, and they decided the matter on sufficiency grounds. Ordinarily speaking, this court doesn't review sufficiency decisions that are made by the courts of appeals. If the court will indulge me for a minute, yesterday I was involved in a court trial in Franklin County. My client was a taxi driver, and he was alleged to, on a couple different days,
Counsel, is the trial over?
It is, Your Honor.
May it come to us at some point?
Potentially, Your Honor.
Well, maybe let's not talk about it.
Okay, all right.
Counsel, let me ask it this way.
Sure.
You have a pop-up store, right?
Okay.
You have 15 sales during the day, over four. The pop-up lasts 4 hours. Isn't that a pattern?
If it's occurring on the same day, Your Honor,
yeah.
Is that your suggestion?
4 hours. Well, I mean, if you want to say over 2 days, the pop-up store is available from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. If you want to do it over 2 days, it's still 4 hours.
Sure.
Either way, isn't under the statute that enough for a pattern?
Could be. Could be. But I think that the bigger point is that the 10th District Court of Appeals in this particular case, under the facts and circumstances of this case, said that there was not a pattern of corrupt activity. There was an enterprise.
The jury said there was.
I understand, Your Honor. I completely understand that. But then we have a Court of Appeals that then looks at what was applied, the facts and the law in the case, and the 10th District Court of Appeals, three judges all agreed that it was not sufficient. And so I think the most important thing to take away from the 10th District Court of Appeals decision is when they give their decision, they specifically say, we're not doing any sort of bright line rule upon the facts of this case. And they go even further and say, this is what the state could have done, and they didn't. So some of the judges have asked some questions specifically to that. And the state doesn't have any response to that because the evidence was not presented to the jury in that regard.
The question isn't what wasn't presented sufficiently. The question is what was presented sufficient to allow a reasonable juror to find the elements of the statute. And if I look at the plain language of the statute, it's really hard for me to figure out what element isn't met. So tell me from the statutory language what wasn't met here.
Well, I think from the statutory language itself, if you just read it, you have to have an enterprise.
Okay.
You have to have an association.
It's hard to say that three people working together to sell drugs aren't an enterprise, isn't it?
Well, there's not any evidence in the record to suggest, separate and aside from this specific occasion, what the relationships of these individuals specifically were. If these are individuals going to this house and just selling drugs on their own, which is in the case law.
But the evidence is pretty clear. They weren't three individuals with their own little stand set up. These were three people who were working together to do this, right?
I understand, and so what we see is the selling of drugs, and there's certainly convictions with regard to that. The bigger distinction is, should these individuals be convicted of the RICO statute, which is separately relating to organized crime, which is the specific intent of the statute, which is a different question. And the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, as the most basic thing under our law, that the elements of that RICO statute have been met.
Right, but if we just apply the plain language, I mean, I know that there's some other requirements that the 10th District read into it, and you'd like us to, but on the language of the statute, it seems they're met, right? It's a pattern. It's an enterprise. It's a pattern. I mean, you conceded it could be a pattern. I mean,
I don't believe so, especially if you read the statute in whole, that the events are not so closely related in time as
right. The events are not so closely related in time as to be considered one act. Well, I mean, clearly no one would consider 15 transactions to be one act, right?
I think they're separate acts, but there's no intervening events in time. They're all at the house.
Right, but that's what the statute says. The statute says they're not so close as they can be considered one thing.
Correct.
Right, I mean, and no one...
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
No one would consider 15 different transactions as one event, right?
I don't know that you could say that, Your Honor.
It was one drug deal? I mean, it was one?
Well, there's separate transactions occurring. The question is, under the RICO statute, do we have a pattern of corrupt activity sufficient for longevity and continuous activity for both the enterprise and the pattern itself?
Well, let's assume instead of 15, there's two. And we'll use the first and the 15th on the video, okay? 4 hours apart, 3 hours and 50-some minutes. Isn't two enough?
It would depend on if the state had proven beyond a reasonable doubt, are these individuals, what are their relationships? Are they
enterprises, any group of persons associated in fact, is there any doubt in fact they were with each other? in that room?
Well, the presence of them at that house, I don't think would qualify to prove the RICO in that regard. Just the presence alone.
Weren't there different sellers? Didn't different people sell? And other people were measuring? And other people were putting it in baggies?
Right, but if they are
own doing... So it's an assembly line of some type. May not be an automated one, but it's an old-style 1800-type assembly line.
And I understand your point, Your Honor. What I'm saying to you is, though, if the state doesn't prove, if these people are just kind of doing their own things, they show up in the house and they're doing their own things, that wouldn't qualify as the RICO.
So they coincidentally show up in the same house and just coincidentally start packaging, bagging, selling, doing the repetitive, and you're saying that that could happen spontaneously with three people just walking into a house, and that's not organized, planned, or part of a common scheme?
I'm saying we don't know how we got there, and whether one...
Well, you know what's on the video.
I understand, Your Honor.
Do you disagree that there appears to be a coordinated effort based on the video?
There are people on the video certainly engaged in illegal activity, drug activity. There's no question about that. I'm not arguing about that. Whether one or some of those individuals just showed up at that day and started engaging in that activity on that day, or whether or not they were doing they had their separate thing going on, is not clear from the record.
Would their separate thing be?
If they had their own separate drug sales or...
Did the evidence or the record indicate that your client brought dope to the house?
No, Your Honor.
And sold it out of the house. He brought his own supply and used that just as a shop to sell it.
I don't believe so, Your Honor, no.
Okay.
Is there a video that showed Mr. Dent buying drugs? Doesn't one of the video clips depict that? That he actually buying drugs in that was depicted on the video itself? Is that, am I recalling the record correctly?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Which then would raise the question of, well, if he's part of the scheme to sell drugs, why is he doing, what is he doing buying drugs from? What you don't know is you don't know the extent to which they are sole proprietors, as it were.
That correct. Happened,
because as the prosecutor said, it's the house is where the enterprise is.
Right, and that would be my point, is we don't know because the state didn't prove the relationships and the other things that they needed to do to satisfy the statute. And if you look at the Department of Justice regulation with regards to filing of RICO actions, they talk about being very specific in filing RICO cases to those in which... being very measured and taking great caution in filing RICO cases, because certainly a very substantial charge, and you want to make sure you do it under the appropriate circumstance. And I know the Supreme Court has recently entered into a task force with regarding wrongful convictions. The 10th District Court of Appeals determined that there was a wrongful conviction with regards to the RICO count. Certainly, Mr. Walker still has been found guilty of the drug transactions, which is a separate part. Whether or not he's liable for the RICO conviction is the question that's before this court. And so what the state is asking you to do, or what their proposition is to have the RICO statute be essentially limitless. And
counsel,
not hold-
would you address the timing? I thought I heard you say that two transactions would be sufficient. You don't have an argument with the number of transactions, but do you think that the 10th District did introduce an element into the RICO of time? And if so, I presume you think that that would be appropriate.
Well, I don't think they introduced that. I think if you look at the precedent, the United States Supreme Court precedent with the Boyle case and the Turquette case, they talk specifically about time and longevity, and all the cases that have been cited before this court talk about. We know what is sufficient time, months or weeks or those sorts of things. This is the first case that I've seen where the state, it appears, is trying to get a conviction for a one-day RICO. The indictment lists March 26th as the only date. And so when, just going back to the point that I was making, what the state's proposition would be that don't hold them to their burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt in proving the RICO case. Instead, stack inferences, do other things that are not appropriate under the law, which is what the 10th District Court of Appeals was not willing to do. And therefore, to avoid wrongful convictions and things like that that could occur by doing some of those things or holding statutes to have no limit whatsoever. So under these facts, ordinarily this court would not determine sufficiency issues. The 10th District Court of Appeals was very specific about their fact-finding, and the state did not prove beyond a reasonable doubt under the very specific facts of this case. And I'd ask the court to consider dismissing this case as a result of that, or affirming the 10th District Court of Appeals for all the reasons that they put in there specific to this particular case. If there's no further questions, that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've got about 2.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case, if not reversed, stands for the principle that a RICO cannot occur unless it expands more than one day. And that's wrong because it's not in the statute. The 10th District abandoned the sufficiency review, and they incorporated an element of the offense of RICO being a durational requirement.
Excuse me, has your office filed RICO actions in similar one-day events like this?
I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that.
Do you know the reason why it was considered in this particular case?
My guess would be because of the compelling evidence. We have surveillance video of them in the house engaged in 15 transactions, showing them working with the dope over a series of hours. All of them, out of the 25 video clips, 23 of the video clips showed some sort of engagement with the drug activity. They had security at the house. They surveilled where they kept their product. All of that goes toward enterprise, as well as pattern. This court has said before that the evidence of pattern and enterprise can be met with the same evidence. We have that here. The house elevates it, shows that this is a RICO offense because there is an ongoing activity inside, joint cooperation between all these men. I'd say that this case should not be dismissed, that this court needs to address the issue of whether there is a time element in the statute. I'd also point out that this is not a wrongful conviction case, absolutely no dispute of identity. These individuals, this surveillance video, crystal clear. You can see the gentlemen's faces, and you see them working with repeatedly with their product. This is not unlike.
Counsel, you didn't, this video or download or whatever you have gotten, that was kind of a bonus, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
The police didn't know it was going to be there.
Correct.
And lo and behold, they obviously for their own security had things videoed probably as an anti-theft deterrent.
Correct.
Okay.
Isn't it also true that the raid itself wasn't focused on either Mr. Walker or Mr. Dent?
I agree with that. It was focused
on
shutting
this
house down.
All right, thank you.
And the fact that these gentlemen were in control of the dope. That proves their involvement with the enterprise and the pattern. Thank you very much. I request that this court reverse.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.